Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The word fail, does it sound scary to you? It shouldn't. It's totally necessary for anyone who wants to develop and learn. Today, we're going to talk about how failing can even be glorious.
You're listening to Health for Wealth, a podcast about sustainable health in modern work life. Even though many of us today are better off than our parents and grandparents were, there's a steady rise in mental illness in our society.
But we can't have that, can we? That's why it's our mission to find out how companies and organizations can combine health, well-being, and prosperity. Because what we do at work often affects the rest of our lives too.
We are Ann-Sofie Forsmark, I'm co-founder of Oxy Group.
And Boel Stier, copywriter and communications consultant. Listen to us to get new insights every week if you're a manager, leader, working in HR, or just an interested employee.
Today we are sort of setting ourselves up for potential failure. Firstly, we haven't recorded online for 2 years now, and we're testing a new digital tool for this episode. And secondly, we're doing the whole episode in English. I do have to say, though, that we're both quite used to speaking English, but it's just we don't do it every day.
Yeah, so what can possibly go wrong? And I'm sitting in a closet to make sure the sound is good. So if Wi-Fi doesn't fail us, perhaps our English will. Well, I can't say I like to fail. That would just be a lie. But after a few decades as a grown-up, I've learned that it's necessary. Sometimes. Still, it's never welcome or easy. But perhaps that will change after talking to our guest today. A warm welcome to you, Josh Lenn.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Boel and Ann-Sofie. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And you're an actor, but you're also a transformational coach. Can you describe what you put in the description of a transformational coach?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I'm really passionate about helping people grow and develop. That often comes with some transformation. That means we change. So I like to bring the best of what I've learned as an actor to companies, teams, leaders, essentially to help them really be more bold and confident.
Yeah, and that's the name of your company, Bold and Confident. And you also teach presentation and collaboration at the Stockholm School of Economics Executive MBA program. Wow, that was a long sentence.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
And we've seen, or at least I've seen, the pictures online where you're together with a group. You've had a session called something like Failing Gloriously, and everyone looks so happy. A bunch of people just laughing. How can you make them like this, Josh? What do you do?
Well, I mean, no one likes to fail, right? It never feels good. It hurts. And in Failing Gloriously, essentially, it's about rewiring our mindset towards failure. So instead of seeing failure as a problem, we see it as an opportunity. So we fail gloriously. And we really celebrate failures. And when we can do that, we can actually start to release something where we're really hard on ourselves and we don't want to fail. And often what we release is tons of creativity and joy and authenticity. And it just feels so good. So the sessions are often, you know, full of laughter. And that's why everyone looks so happy at the end.
So what can you give an example of what you're actually doing during these sessions? Because I would assume that some people come in and they're like, yeah, I'm ready to fail. And some people will be quite hesitant. So what do you do and how do you cater for those different sort of mentalities when they come in?
Yeah, I would say the big majority of people are freaked out in the beginning. You know, I what we really do, and I would say the full version of this session is 3 hours. And I would say the first 45 minutes is pretty much dedicated to failing. So, you can't just talk about failure. You have to experience it. So I do a lot of different interactive exercises that are really set up for you to fail in a very low stakes way. We go through the process of what does it feel like when you actually love it? It feels super awkward in the beginning to actually cheer for failure, but we cheer, we clap, we celebrate. And then all of a sudden it's this huge release. So we have to experience it a lot. I mean, because I'm assuming you two can be pretty tough on yourselves, right? Can you be hard on yourselves?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
happens too. Same with me. And, you know, we've got this ruthless inner critic and we want to get it right and we want to succeed. And if we don't, we can often whip ourselves. So by practicing celebrating failure, it's that rewiring and it can often lift that inner critic a bit and we can be a little bit bigger and a little bit bolder. And that's really what I want for everyone who comes through, who I work with.
I feel that I totally long for all these feelings that you describe after having learned how to love failure. But there's also a lot of fear. And I mean, 3 hours, I'm amazed by... It's quite a short amount of time to make a group of people really show themselves naked, if you see what I mean. So... How do you do that? Because I guess people come in there and sometimes there's even rivalry in a group. Sometimes it's a group working well together. Mm. How do you make them there?
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes I can work with teams that are pretty beat up. They've been through a lot of adversity. And sometimes it's a room full of complete strangers. And it's like, whoa, who are these people? So there's a quote that I love by John Cleese is nothing will prevent you from being creative so effectively as the fear of making a mistake. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Like, so if we have that fear of failing, we often hold back our big ideas. And I think you can actually replace creative with passionate, authentic, you know, we hold ourselves back as people when we have this fear. So the way I do it is by creating an atmosphere where it's safe to fail. And in order to do that, I really need to model that myself. So I need to be ready to fail. I need to be pushing myself deep out of the comfort zone. And show that, hey, it's fun here, you know what I mean? And it's safe here. We can all go here together. And so I really have a really high tempo sessions Everything is experiential. You only sit down for literally the first 10 minutes, and then the next 2 hours and 50 minutes, we're on our feet. And next thing you know, we're all getting swept up in this energy where it is totally okay to show yourself. And not only is it okay, but we're going to celebrate you. And I think I've been doing it so many times now, I've kind of found a good process where we slowly get there, and then all of a sudden we're there, and it's kind of like the full fire. You know, I kind of look at myself as one of those little fire starters you put in the fireplace to light all the wood. And then once it gets lit, you know, it's roaring, and it's wild, and it's fun. Wow. And people really dare. So sometimes it can take, you know, 10, 15 minutes. Sometimes it can take like 30, 40 minutes to get there, depending on where people are at and where the team is at. But we usually get there.
So you've done this for a few years now, and you trust the process.
Yes. Yes, I trust the process. Absolutely.
I think a lot of people, first of all, if they're attending the session, unless their manager told them to be there, and they, you know, but if they want to be there, they're ready to go through this process, even if it's scary. Both me and Boel are very fascinated by behavioral science and taking, you know, behaviors back to your normal life. What's the key to when you have that energy and you feel brave and you feel ready to fail as a part of learning, and then you go back to your workplace? What's the key to transition the insights they get through your sessions and then applying them in their normal life again?
Yeah, great. Not always easy to do, right? Because a lot of the structures we work at, we don't want to fail. And a lot of people I deal with feel like, oh, it's not okay to fail at work. However, we fail. You know, it's failure's undefeated. It gets all of us. And I always like to say it's the culture that we create around failure that will define our success, right? Because failure's not the opposite of success. So I think in order to keep it alive back at work is, one, we need to be, you know, leading failure as people. And that means what we normally do with failure is we either shame it or we sweep it under the rug and pretend it didn't happen. So one is we need to be more open about our failures. We need to own them. We need to talk about them as a group and really try and celebrate them back in your weekly meetings and figure out, hey, what can we learn from this, right? And try and see what are the gifts in this failure. That's one thing. Secondly, during the session, once we've gotten to this failure mindset, what we do is then we model different ways of communicating where we essentially take away failure, right? So a couple of the other concepts we work on are open listening, so which is essentially non-judgmental listening. Which is not easy to do because most of the time we listen with a critical ear where we're like instantly critiquing, evaluating, and judging. So we do listening exercises to try and get really present with each other and really accepting. And then we model different ways of communicating. So part of the work is, the core of the work is working with yes and, which are two words that can radically change the way we create, collaborate, and communicate. So when we use yes and, it's a method of building on each other's ideas in a very non-judgmental, accepting way, we increase creativity. And so if we can bring a few of these things back, which is leading failure, being open about it, and then changing the way we communicate in words and being conscious about that, it can make a huge difference of transitioning the learnings from the session to work. And I've seen teams really use this long after the sessions are over, and it has a tremendous benefit in terms of how the team comes together chemistry-wise and also how creative and innovative they can be.
That's interesting. I've heard that the word but and what it signals when you use it, it differs a whole lot from using the word and, like you described. So,
yeah.
So if I'm discussing something with Anne-Sophie, the future of our pod, and we're brainstorming, and she's coming up with an idea, and I'm saying, yes, but I'd also like to add that we could go to Germany and record it. Then she will always, she will only remember that I said but and kind of rejected her idea, right?
Yeah.
But if I would say, yeah, and we could also go to Germany to record, is then she would feel that I gave her credit for her idea, but added something. Is that how it works?
Yes. So that is essentially exactly how it works. So what happens when we yes but an idea is we are instantly looking for the problem in that person's idea, right? And this is where we live. This is our comfort zone. And it's no surprise because we've been taught our whole educational lives to think critically. And when you yes but an idea, you're instantly being critical to that idea. So that's what I call critical listening, not open listening. That's like the opposite. So I'm listening to you with that critical ear. And often we do this and we don't even know we're doing it, you know, because we've just learned to be in this yes but mindset. And when I yes and your idea, then I'm seeing, oh, how can I build on your idea? So I'm being, when you are in a pure state of yes and, it is actually impossible to be judgmental, right? So you're just like, yes, and you're just like, give me everything. And so what happens is you take away the possibility of failure. So when you take it away because you're just accepting everything, then people dare more. They're more bold. They're like, I'll say this. I don't know if this is good or bad. I'm going to put this idea out there and you're going to build on it. And we're going to see if we can make something awesome. And if you can do that, you create a space where people just really put themselves out there with no fear. And then what we have is we have access to all our creativity. Because switching out one word, it radically changed everything, right? We give each other the access to this endless well of creativity that we all have. We just need to get in there. And so I often say, like, we hold the keys to each other's creativity, and we don't know it. Because the hardest thing there is to do is to yes and yourself, right? Because often we sit with an idea, we're like, oh, I don't know if this is good. Yeah. But it's a little crazy. You know, we're often yes-butting ourselves and we don't dare to just put it out there. But if you go into your team meetings and you're like, okay, we're going to yes-and everything for the next 5 minutes. And you feel like, okay, I can say this. I don't know what if it's good or not. Let's just go with it. That creates amazing safety. And that safety will release so much creativity.
When we talk about yes and yes but, we come into the perspective
compare
of
this to,
semantic.
Okay, sorry. We started talking at the same time.
Jag ville gå över till negation, the question of negation.
Yeah, that's a better follow. Okay. So
yes but and yes and, we sort of did different words and different words, obviously, like we're talking about now, have meanings for our brain. And I had a question. This is a sort of devil's advocate kind of question. But I think, you know, our brains aren't wired for negation. So if I tell you not to think of a white polar bear, that's what's going to come up in your head. So what happens if we're trying to achieve something, but we're thinking we're striving for failure, but we're actually striving for learning and success, which is, when we listen to you, it's obvious that's the goal. And being failing as a part of learning and eventually succeeding. But is there a risk that we focus too much on celebrating failure when what we want is success?
Mm. Yeah, so this is actually something people ask about all the time. And like I said earlier, a lot of companies that I have worked with in the past are like, can we change the name of your session? Because our conference is about winning and success. but honestly, the two are tied together. Like I said earlier, failure is not the opposite of success. It's part of winning. And I think there's certain industries where this is super duper clear. For example, in sports, the team that wins the championship always loses somewhere in the season. There's a lot of, I think what I'm not saying is like, hey, you have to just focus on failure. But as we strive to win, there are going to be failures along the way. And how we deal with those can really define our success. So there's different ways of kind of dealing with failure. I recently saw Sean Acor. Do you know who that is? He did this. He's a Harvard professor and he has this TED talk on happiness. He has this concept of failing up, which is a way of learning to be resilient. And he says there's three responses to failure. One is you just kind of circle around it and get stuck on that failure. Secondly, you let it bring you down. Or third, you use that failure to help you grow and become stronger. And that's really the goal of failing gloriously, is using failure as fuel to help you grow. So you don't just bounce back, you bounce forward. And so as we strive to win anything or have success, the way we deal with those little mini failures that come can mean everything. And a lot of places where I work with or companies that I've been to where they're like, we can't fail here. You know, we can't fail. And the truth is, there are failures, right? Those are the companies that really need it the most, in a way, because there are failures that happen. We just sweep them under the rug and pretend they weren't there. And what happens is when you have an environment where failure's not accepted, is people walk around tense because they want to get it right. They want to succeed. And that can often hold you back. And even, like, I would say even some of the most innovative CEOs, you know, on earth, like, for example, Elon Musk is a great example. He is doing very kind of amazing things in the world. And if you're like, oh, Tesla, they can't fail. That's a car. Cars can't fail. But he knows, like, in his operations, failure has to be an option. And he has a great quote where I'm going to totally paraphrase his quote, but he says something about failure has to be an option, because if it's not, we might get something worse than lack of innovation. We might go backwards. And I think that's the fear. So if failure is, if you're safe to fail and you're still striving to win, you might even win bigger. You know, those failures often lead to bigger wins, because that's how we learn stuff.
What does your inner critic tell you? Are you ever afraid of failing yourself? And what do you do then?
Oh my God, I'm afraid of failing all the time. I think the practice, this is actually really present on my mind right now. Because there's so many changes going on in the world. This comes up for me all the time. I'm afraid of failing, putting myself out there in many ways. And I think that the practice of failing gloriously is something that I do quite a lot. And so it helps me to be more bold and to go with it. And sometimes you can even rehearse failure ahead of time. So you can really, before you dare to do something, you can rehearse it and say, okay, well, what's the worst thing that's going to happen if I do this and it fails? Well, and then you can kind of go through the steps. So that can help you be like, hey, I'll survive. I'll live. I'm going to put myself out there anyways. And I think that one thing that's nice for me is, even though, my inner critic held me back for years. You know, there were years where I didn't dare and I really played it small. And those were some, when I look back, those were some really painful times where it felt like I gave up years of my life living kind of inauthentically, you know, doing work or that wasn't really connected to me. And it hurts, you know, it hurts to know that that inner critic really couldn't go big for a long time. And I think the nice thing is when your inner critic is there and you dare to do stuff anyways, you start to prove to yourself, hey, I can do some stuff, right? And then if you do have some failures along the way and you're like, okay, you get back up, you try to celebrate it, even though it hurts, you're like, what is the gift in this? And you get back on the horse and you go big again, then you start to show yourself like, I can do this. I can do big stuff in the world, or at least big stuff for me. And you start to build more confidence and you start to say, hey, I can dare more and more all the time. And that's why failing is so good. Is you start to rack up the failures, the more and more you celebrate them and the more failures you have, the less afraid you are of them.
So it's about practice.
Yeah, it's really about practicing. So I'm not saying I look forward to failure. It's not like, yes, I failed, I love it all the time, because sometimes it really hurts. And it can even mean your livelihood. It can be money, big failures, like some of the ones that are happening to me right now in my business during COVID-19. If we start to see the gift in them and celebrate them, then we can start to look for possibilities, right? And that's really what being resilient is trying to really see what else can happen.
So right now, many people are really worried about a lot, about the health, their own, their family members, worried about their jobs and their income and being able to put food on the table. So I guess the exercise you just described is probably something we'll need to do. What's the worst outcome right now? And trying to boil it down to what's actually the most important right now. And I guess for most of us, that would end up in taking care of ourselves and the people around us.
I guess as a reflection, as a self-employed in these times, I can totally relate to what you're experiencing and what you're explaining. I'm a little bit nicer on and easier on myself at this time because I know this is untreaded grounds. I had to do a lot of things digital, and I'm sort of used to some of them, but I'm very sort of, I miss meeting people in the room, and I'm sort of, it's easier to be kinder on myself. I don't want to lower expectations, but I'm sort of accepting that, you know, I am going to fail. Things are not going to go as well as planned. And as long as I sort of learn until I'm, you know, doing it the next time, then it's all good. It's all good. And that's sort of easier because we're all in this situation together. It's all affecting us differently. But I actually feel that I can totally relate to the learning process of failure at the moment much better now than if everything was set up perfect as it was a couple of months ago. Have you experienced that too? Because you're very active now, as always. But I guess during the COVID-19 crisis, you've got your senses on this as well.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I've been experiencing a lot of failure, so to speak. I mean, I lost all my business in 48 hours. I mean, I work in the live events and workshops and talks kind of business. So in 48 hours, I had every job canceled except one that we tried to do online. And it was one of those moments where it was like, okay, how do we deal with this failure now? And of course, it's not easy to just be like, hooray, I just lost all business. You know, there was definitely a process of, I would say, 24 hours that it was, it brought me down, or maybe a bit more. It was tough to deal with, and I had a lot of anxiety. And then I started to kind of come around to, okay, how can I try and reframe this in a way as a gift, you know, to get something out of this? It's really hard right now. So I started to try and reinvent what I'm doing online, which feels, to be honest, pretty terrifying. You know, so this is like, I'm right in the storm of the inner critic is like on full alert right now. And, you know, I'm right in this with you. And Sophia is, you know, self-employed. There's tons of failures right now. And yeah, that's great that you're being very nice to yourself and kind to yourself.
I can, it's not 100%, but I'm trying to think, have I done this before? Is it likely that it's going to go as well as I think? No, you know, and can I, as long as I learn from every session or whatever I'm doing, then yeah. Wow. But I am, both me and Boel have joined your, the Friday sessions that you do. And obviously I haven't been in contact with you before, so I don't know if you've done them before, but they were amazing. And you seem so used to doing them. And you were all like, I was so impressed by how you handle the media and all the people and the energy. And so I think you're doing a fantastic job. And I've only seen like a tiny, tiny bit.
Oh, thank you so much. It was such a blast to have both of you on there. I can tell you, I was more nervous for that first Fire Up Friday than any speaking gig I've had in the last couple of years. I was terrified. I was running around my house, like stressed out. I'm not used to doing stuff online. And I think when this happened, I did a training with Stockholm School of Economics for SE, actually, and we did it online, and I was like, huh, this is that you can actually do some stuff online. I'm just gonna give away this Fire Up Friday thing, give away energy. That's what I do. And that, you know, I felt like I could give stuff to people and see how this works. And yeah, I was ready to fail big time. So I'm glad you felt it went well.
I really enjoyed dancing in front of my screen with, I don't know, 40, 50 other people from everywhere. Because sooner or later, I found myself in a breakout room. I didn't know that digital tools could create that. So for a few minutes, I was doing the
Yes and?
Yes and exercise together with three other people from around the globe, and that was so much fun. Could we just say something about those sessions, Josh, because they're free, and for now, they're every Friday, right?
Every Friday, 12:40 Central European Time to 1.
So how do you find these sessions if anyone would like to join?
Yeah, so you can connect with me on LinkedIn. That's one way, Josh Len. I'm putting it on my website, which is boldandconfident.se, and there'll be a link. It's totally free. It's a 20-minute boost. Yeah, like you said, it's wild. We danced. You will do some exercises with people who you don't know in breakout rooms, and hopefully they'll be fun. And there's a lot of joy. What we've noticed, what I've been kind of overwhelmed by, is this isolation is so tough. And we all need connection. And you can actually feel amazing online connecting with people, even though we're all these like tiny little 10 centimeter people now. You can actually, it feels great to, you know, dance and move and do fun things with people online, and you get a lot out of it. And the feeling in my body, at least when I do this stuff, it feels like a chemical change. And I feel so grateful for these online tools that it's actually possible right now to do this, because I feel like we all need this so badly. This is, yeah, like you said, Anne-Sophie, this is unprecedented. This is very difficult times to navigate. And we need each other. We need to support each other. We need to give each other energy, passion. We need to reconnect with all the stuff that really gets us through. And so hopefully Fire Up Friday can be a dose of that for anyone who wants to come. We're going to do it every week for the foreseeable future. And please join. We'd love to have you. We can. I just bumped my Zoom up, so I can take up to 500 people. So.
Wow.
Who knows?
You're ready.
I'm ready.
So, Josh, how did you come to realize that you wanted to work with helping people fail?
Oh, yeah. That's a great process for me. So I can tell you a little bit how this work came into my life. I took my first class in improvised theater when I was about 20 years old. And this was in San Francisco, where I'm from. And it was adults, all different ages. And I really wanted to try it because I was like, oh, this looks fun. And I was so terrified. And the whole class was really terrified. And we had this really tough teacher from the South. She was very intimidating. And she would just kind of like stand on the side, give us an exercise and stand on the side, just watch us with her hand on her chin. And we were so afraid collectively as a group to make a mistake and to go in and do something wrong and show ourselves. And I remember in that class, one time, for some reason, I had the courage to jump in and really dare. And I did this scene and I was killing it. I was like in this character and everyone's laughing. And she jumps in and she said, "That's it. That's how you do it. That's good." And I was like, "Oh, okay. I'm good now." You know, like, hey, I don't want to screw this up. So I think that was like my one moment that whole class. I don't think I ever really dared again. And in any way, and it was not a fun beginner class to have. So that this whole experience kind of freaked me out from improv, and I didn't do it again for about 7 years. And then when I was about 27, I went back and I had this teacher who was super playful. Her name is Laura Derry in San Francisco. Super playful and wild. And she said, "Whenever you fail in this class, you can take a failure bow and just say, 'I failed.'" And I was like, "Whoa, this is different." And then she was explaining an exercise and she failed. And she was like, "I failed." And we all kind of clapped for her. We're like, "Oh, this is fun." And what happened is I started to throw myself on stage. I started to dare. And we all did as a group, because we all were like, it's safe here. And by really focusing on failure and celebrating it, the work in that class got so much better. We all got so much better. So this was like kind of the entrance to the work for me. And then when I moved to Stockholm, I went to a Swedish theater that was having an improv festival and played. And they said, the woman who was the artistic director said, "Will you teach theater here in English?" And I was like, "Yes, and let's do it. I've never taught. This would be great." And so I started to teach improv and I loved it. And people seemed to resonate with my style of teaching. And one of my students said, "Hey, will you come do this for my company?" And he works for this company called Veriday. His name is Stefan Moritz. And Veriday is like a world-class design consultancy. They now got bought by McKinsey. They're called McKinsey Design now. And I did it with them and we had so much fun. And I've been working with them for like 8 years now. And they're some of my absolute favorite people. And then I started to love the work and I was like, wow, you know, I love acting. Acting feels like it's more for me. Like, you know, it's a challenge for me. And, you know, but when I'm doing this work, I feel like I'm actually giving people something and I'm contributing to the world. And when I see people embrace the work and really take it on and become more more comfortable being themselves, then I feel like, oh, I've done something in the world that feels good. So that's kind of how my long story of how I got here. And so about 3 years ago, I fully embraced it. And I'm like, I'm going for this. Because for a while, to be honest with you, for a while, it took so long to build an identity as an actor. This corporate work I was doing, I kind of hid it down deep. I'm like, oh, I'm an actor. I can't do work with corporates. But I was like, wait, I love this. Yes, I can. I can do this. And so it took a while. That's another inner critic thing, mind-made thing that was holding me back. And once I busted through that and dove into it a few years ago, things started to kind of grow. And I've attracted a lot of great companies that have really embraced the work. And so it's been a lot of joy.
Well, well done, Josh, to you know, going through that process and accepting. I mean, 'cause I know what you mean. I'm, for example, I used to be a journalist, and for some people, it's like a better thing to be a journalist than actually selling your communications services, like I do now. But I think if you're in between those worlds where like the status of one thing is higher in some parts of the world or together with some people, I guess that if you yourself are happy with your choices, the world will usually respect those choices too. But when you're not sure about the choices you've made for yourself, then you signal this to the world and then it becomes strange, right?
I totally agree with you. And this is such a challenge because to really live authentically, right? When we're in this society that puts labels on things and status on things. And I know there's so many people out there struggling with this because I used to be one of them. I was holding myself back, not really daring. And even when I started doing acting, you know, this is a whole long story, but, you know, I didn't really, I knew I wanted to do it, but I didn't start till I was 27, right? Really. And then I don't even think I ever dared the way I'm daring now. So, you know what I mean? And I think so this process of really saying, hey, I want to live authentically and really tune in to what your passion is and who you are, it's so hard. And that's really where the inner critic comes up and all the voices from how we were grown. And I think that's really been my mission in life is to really figure out me, who I am. And now that I'm doing that, I just feel this burst of energy. And I think that's really what I want to give others is a lot through the work I'm doing is I'm giving people like a supercharged version of what I needed to really tune into myself. In a way. And that's why, that's really why I'm focused so much on failure, to be honest with you. That's why it's so at the core of the work. Because I think the more we get okay with it, the more we can actually dare to be ourselves.
Yeah, and I really take with me the fact that it's not an opposite to success. It's a way to success, and it's actually being successful, because anyone who's been successful, I guess Edison with his light bulb is the most well-known example. If he'd given up times 599, we wouldn't have the light bulb, or at least he wouldn't have come up with the light bulb. So it's a way towards success, and it's a part of being successful is acknowledging and celebrating failure gloriously, as you put it.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
I asked my followers or my network on LinkedIn yesterday, I think, what they wanted to ask you, Josh. And one of those questions I got, I think you read it too. I think it's interesting and it's probably difficult to answer. So I'll let's try together. She wrote, how do we go about this in a really big organization? She wrote, it looks good on paper, but how do you create the framework that really allows us or people to practice that way of working in real life.
Mm. Yeah, this is definitely one of those big challenges. And I think a lot of companies are really in need of this, right? Right now, especially like a lot of traditional companies can't really think traditionally anymore, but they're still kind of stuck in traditional thinking. Like, for example, companies like Volvo and IKEA and, you know, H&M, like these companies can't be traditional companies anymore. They need to be super innovative. They need to think like tech companies, yet they don't have the framework. So I think, first of all, I'm not saying I have all the answers here, but I think it really is a big leadership issue. It needs to start with leadership. We need to lead failure. If we don't, because I know a lot of these companies can't fail, for example, that's kind of the attitude, right? I've worked with plenty of those companies like, hey, we can't fail here. If we fail, people die. You know, I even worked with Apoteket, which is like the most Swedish company. Yet in business, we have failures. And so I think if some of these companies don't start to lead failure, be open about it as leaders, put it out there, dare to be vulnerable and talk about their failures, they're going to be irrelevant, you know? And I think we've seen that with some of the biggest companies. You know what I mean? Like if you look at some of these companies, they're a bit behind, you know? And I think that in order to catch up, they really need to start bringing in failure if they want to be innovative, because all innovative companies, you know that failure has to be at the core. Like Spotify, you know, I work a lot with Spotify. It's like part of their manifesto. And it doesn't mean, hey, we love failing, but it means like we know it's essential. So I think it needs to start with the leaders. We need to be more open about it. We need to have a process of talking about it in our meetings and leading with it. And then we need to really celebrate it. Because I think the big danger is if we only celebrate success, then all we want to do is play it safe so we can win, right? And if we start to really celebrate failure and open up for it, the chances of us actually winning bigger are much bigger, because then we allow ourselves to dare, be creative, take big risks, and we're not playing it safe, because we just cannot play it safe right now. No companies can.
No.
Otherwise, it'll be a rude awakening when you're not there anymore.
But I'm thinking perhaps if you're in this huge organization and there's a lot of policies and stuff, you can always, I guess, change how you perhaps start a meeting with a group of 6 to 10 people. So if you perhaps use the yes and exercise, just making sure that everyone is heard in a meeting, that's a really small thing that can probably get a lot of effect in your closest surrounding. So I guess that's one way of doing it. You don't always have to, what do you say, eat the whole elephant at once.
I think that's great, to be honest with you. And you can absolutely bring yes in. You don't have to eat the whole elephant at once. I have a friend, someone I work with, Kim Nixon at H&M, and she said that they have in their meetings, they talk about their shit sandwiches, their failures, and they're very open about it. And I think that is wonderful, to have sessions where we just take away this stigma and shame of failing. And we're just like, hey, this is how we failed. This went wrong. It's not the end of the world. What can we learn from this? And so I agree with you. We don't have to eat the whole elephant at once. And there are small things that we can continue to do, which will probably spread through the culture. One of the things I love about Yes And is when you actually work with a group that yes ands a lot, their positive energy becomes so contagious, that group becomes magnetic. And you're just like, oh, I want to be with these people. They're yes and people. And so it can just take over the yes buts. You know what I mean? And I think it, you know, it's like, it's a snowball effect. It's just like passion, you know, passion's contagious and yes and's contagious. And all these good things just send out ripples and waves into an organization. So if you feel that you're in an organization where you're like, oh, this doesn't work in real life, instead of letting it beat you down and getting you stuck, try to be that leader who models it. That I can lead with failure, I can yes and, I can bring this energy out and see what happens. Because I think you will attract people and I think it will make some noise. Because one of the things I definitely think is you can't expect a culture to happen to you. You have to create it. So if you want this culture where failure is accepted and you want this yes and culture, you need to model what that looks like on a daily basis. You need to show up creating safe environments, bringing positive energy, and being that person.
So either we're managers or not, we can all take responsibility and set that snowball in motion with small things every day, right?
Definitely.
So thank you so much, Josh, for coming today. And this has actually been a really good session. We didn't fail that much, did we?
No, I don't think so. Is that okay? If we just skipped failure and just went for success? Just for this once.
We failed to fail.
I'm sure I missed a few words here and there, but I think I really enjoyed this this talk. And I will take the yes and with me. Also when talking to myself these days, when at least I am working from home a lot and not meeting other people all the time. Our partner, motivation.se, Sweden's leadership site or Sveriges ledarskapssite, they have an article about exactly what we've been talking about today, how vulnerability and courage go hand in hand. So you can find a link to that article in this episode notes. And in that article, you can find out more about how you can avoid letting fear rule your life. And that's what we've been talking about today.
Yes. Thank you so much, Josh. I've also really, really.
We would like to thank our partners, motivation.se and Agda Media. Failure arrived at last.
Yes, finally. Just when you said we didn't fail.
We put it to the universe. I couldn't hear Boel. I could see her talk, but I couldn't hear her. So, well, there you go. Thank you so much, Josh. Thank you, everyone.
Why don't you wrap it up, Anthony?
Yeah, thank you so much, Josh. Thank you, Boel. Thank you, Agnete, and thank you everyone for listening. And please keep the discussion going and please take care out there.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for having me.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.